Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey, amigos. You know what's really easy to do and even easier to forget? Please help me out and hit that like button if you're listening on YouTube. And if you're listening somewhere else, what the hell? Pop in, give me a thumb. Say hello while you're at it. It helps me a ton with the algorithm. And besides, it's real nice to see you there. And now, on to the show. Hey, welcome back, friend. Glad to see the heat this week didn't kill you. If you can survive that, you can survive anything. Wasn't so bad, he says. Easy for you to say, you cold-blooded prick. That's right, just float around in the swamp all day. Come on in, friend. Some of us got to keep the lights on around here. Oh, didn't you want to hear about SimplyScaryPodcast.com? You can become a patron there and listen to thousands of scary stories, no ads or anything. Just click on the patron button and follow the instructions. And if that's not enough patronage for you, check out patreon.com/drewblood if you want to. So tonight our tale comes courtesy of Cecily 1987. Can any of y'all guess what year he was born? In it, we join an interdimensional Sasquatch cop hunting down a rogue killer in the human poaching business. This one comes from Cecily's book, Dark Voices Beckon You, soon to become one hell of an audiobook, by the way. So, without further delay, from author Cecily 1987, I give you, I'm a Warden Between Realities. I must break the silence. I must let everyone know the dangers that exist in this world and others. To start with, this world is not the only world. There is another world that lays on top of it, sometimes under it. They intertwine around like snakes in mating, or snakes in battle. Some places there are openings where worlds bleed through into each other. There's the world you are familiar with, Earth, the one dominated by Homo sapiens and war, the one with rudimentary space travel and complex machinery for the purpose of entertainment. The other one, well, the other one is vastly different. It's not called Earth. Its name is unable to be expressed in human language. It's a place where reality is a strange and tangible thing, more able to be manipulated. Thoughts and the physical define one another and play off one another. The concepts intertwine like braided cords. The other world is overflowing with things extremely limited on Earth. It would be called magic if that simplifies it for you. But of course, it's much more, and some of it bleeds through the realities into Earth's realm to be used by humans. Sometimes entire entities from other realities bleed through, either by accident or on purpose. That's where I come in. I have different titles in different places, but the best way to describe my job would be a reality warden, a watcher between the worlds. I patrol the gaps between dimensions, the places where our worlds blend together and things that don't belong slip through. See, there is a lot of reasons for creatures to sneak across the plains to enter Earth's realm. Just because Earth is low on magic doesn't mean it doesn't have tons of ingredients magic users deeply desire. This is the reason I'm on my current assignment. It's the reason why I'm high up in a tree in a Washington State park, scouting out the surrounding forest. Something has illegally crossed to Earth to gather spell ingredients. and I have to catch this creature before a lot of people are killed. I leap from the tree to land with ease. One of the magical runes embedded in my bandolier vibrates softly, letting me know something is amiss. I look down at my feet to see one black boot untied. I sigh and lean over to retie it. I could have easily tripped. It's always the small things I forget. The prey I'm after is a clever one. A fugitive from across the gap, he is a bane on any plane of existence he walks upon. I've been on his trail for years, and I'll be sure not to let him slip away tonight. Chisar the Cruel, or Chris to his fellow lowlifes. He traffics in illegal goods between the realms. He also traffics in people. Well, I forgot to tell you, he's a Sasquatch, or a Bigfoot, or whatever you want to call them. They're not native to Earth. They come from a large colony across the gap. In Chisar's circles, humans are in high demand. Earth may not have a lot of magic, but humans contain it within them, almost literally. Their organs and parts can be used for a myriad of magical potions and spells. Humans fetch a high price on the black market, dead or alive. Living humans can be bred for an infinite stock of magical ingredients. I may tell you about the horrors of the breeding camps, the human mills, some other time. It's a good cautionary tale, but has no bearing on this current case. I make my way towards the cabin a mile away, a crumpled flyer in my hand. Chisar has been spotted in the area, whether from sloppiness or intentional. Now he has a group of Bigfoot hunters after him. The flyer is from a signpost back in town. It seems that the United Sasquatch Association, USA, was throwing a big party at the cabin before taking off into the forest with cameras, guns, and a lot of booze to finally catch the elusive sapien. I needed to get to the Bigfoot hunters before they actually did find them. I pray they haven't yet. They really don't want to cross paths with Chisar the Cruel. A quick look at the United Sasquatch Association's Facebook page showed me that there were at least 15 members deep at the cabin. I was surprised that many people still took Bigfoot seriously. We had done so well discrediting witnesses throughout the years. Of course, it could be the USA members were just looking for an excuse to run around in the woods with guns. I heard in town they were trying to film a pilot episode for the Travel Channel, whatever that meant. I was quickly dodging between the trees at a light jog when I heard the gunshot. It wasn't far away, and it was followed by a scream. I took a knee and tapped one of the runes on my bandolier. The magic within it activated, and my senses sharpened. It was already getting dark, but now I could see clearly. I could feel subtle vibrations of bugs moving in the dirt around me, and I could smell the copper scent of gunpowder and blood. A lot of blood. I took off at a sprint now, my enhanced senses allowing me to bob and weave deftly between the trees and over the bushes. Fear and adrenaline pumped through my veins. I was afraid I was too far away and was too late to stop Chisar from killing again. As I got closer to the origin of the gunshot, the smell of blood and bullets was almost overwhelming. I breathed in slightly through my nose to gather the information, telling me the blood was from a man further to my left. The scent told me the man was bleeding profusely, had been drenched in sweat, and had soiled himself. I broke through the underbrush to find the body. It was a bearded man, decked out in camo, laying on his back, staring glazed-eyed into the sky. His face was now forever frozen in a scowl of pain and terror. His right hand had a white-knuckled death grip on a bent rifle, the rifle's barrel twisted up at almost a right angle. His stomach had been ripped open, his guts grotesquely thrown about him. I could see parts of his intestines running up from his body to loop over a branch a couple of feet away. Blood and viscera decorated the surrounding trees like a terrible art exhibit. It was like whoever ripped him open had thrown his insides about in a hurry, like a child digging for his favorite toy at the bottom of a toy box. I knelt down next to the desecrated body. I bent over with my head angled so I could look into the gaping wound that used to be the dead man's chest. I found, or didn't find, what I expected. The heart was missing. The guts had been cleared out so the killer could reach up under the rib cage to secure his prize. Human hearts fetched a hefty price across the gap. It could be used in a variety of potent spells. Of course, there were more parts of the human body that could be used for spells, but the heart was the most important. Jassar must have been in a hurry. He could have stripped the body clean, but he only grabbed the most valuable part before running off. I had no doubt Jassar would come back to harvest the corpse, but right now he was killing all the humans in the area before they got away from him. He could take his time once they were all good and dead. I breathed in deeply, and my powerful senses differentiated between a litany of smells to find the one I was looking for. I picked out the foul stench of Jassar. It was a mixture of unwashed fur, rancid sweat, and decay. I stood and faced in the direction the scent led. I said a prayer to my ancestors to help me be able to save the survivors, if there were any. 3 minutes later, I approached a giant two-story cabin. I quickly counted 7 vehicles out front, not counting multiple four-wheelers and buggies. All of the tires on the vehicles had been flattened, and one car was missing the driver's side door, revealing a seat filled with a red pool of blood and mangled meat. I crouched low and began sneaking towards the door. I rubbed the rock rune on my belt to activate a noise-dampening aura around me. One of my runes was already activated. It worked by taking the scent of the surrounding area and having my body magically produce the scent instead of my own natural smell. It was a good camouflage, but the spell could be easily broken if somebody was aware of me or was mentally concentrating on me. The heavy wooden double doors that were the entrance to the cabin had been bashed open. One door that now resembled kindling had exploded violently inward and across the floor of the cabin. I stepped across the threshold carefully, trying not to crunch the wood and bits of glass underfoot. Only the low fire in the fireplace threw dancing shadows across the horrific scene. I could just make out destroyed furniture and bodies strewn all about. Balloons drifted lazily above, bumping up against the ceiling. To my right was a folding table set up to block access to the stairs. Food and drinks were set up on the table, and a banner saying "Congrats USA" on the TV show, with the Travel Channel's logo and a comical Bigfoot drawn. Well, I guess my intel is old. The hunters already got the TV show deal, and they were all celebrating when Jassar rolled up and began his slaughter. There were more people here than expected. They looked like families. It was a celebration. I counted the dead and dismembered, guts torn open and hearts ripped out. It was terrible, and I felt the full weight of guilt and anger pulled down on me. I looked down around at the frozen faces of terror and pain, a death mask on the murdered people. 21 men and women, thankfully no children. I knew Jassar was ruthless, but how did he kill so many so quickly? A back door to the cabin had been left wide open. My enhanced eyesight picked out 2 crumpled bodies laying out in the clearing behind the cabin. They had made it further than the others. There were also more cars parked around back, hiding their numbers. It must have been a surprise party. The USA's family members had interrupted the boys' hunting trip to celebrate the new TV show. But where were the children? All the dead were adults, with the youngest being a clean-shaven man who lay broken over the torn couch. I glanced back at the table to see a keg of alcohol. Maybe it was a party for adults only. Maybe no children were invited. My heart sank as I spotted evidence to refute my theory. On an end table that hadn't been overturned lay a spilt juice box and one of those spinner things the young played with. I began my search anew, breathing deep of the foul stench around me in a vain attempt to detect the scent of living children. I moved into the adjoining kitchen with its large L-shaped island and bar stools. I immediately noticed a bar stool propped against the door of the pantry. I rushed over to it and paused to sniff the air again. I could smell the vivid scent of children on the other side of the door. In a haste, I tossed the bar stool away and flung the door open. The ambient light from the kitchen revealed the huddled shapes of six children. They all began to scream. Maybe it was foolish of me to rip the door open and scare the already traumatized children, but I didn't care. I was so thankful to see their terrified, tear-stained faces. There were six of them, three girls and three boys. The oldest was a girl around 12 or 13, hugging all of them close, shielding them with her body. One of the boys looked to be the youngest at around 5, with the rest in between. I held up both my hands, palms out, patting the air in a calming gesture. The screams continued for a little longer while I gently shushed them. Their wide eyes began to blink as they slowly realized I was a man, not a monster. I knelt down in the doorway and put a smile on my face. "I'm here to help. Don't worry. I'm here to take you away from this scary place," I explained in the calmest voice I could muster. The children just stared back at me. The oldest girl shot daggers at me with her eyes. "Who are you?" the oldest girl demanded from me. She was pretty, with a face full of freckles, jet black hair tied into pigtails, and a red dress with white polka dots. Her attire seemed to be out of place to me, but I couldn't be called an expert on what the children wore these days. "I'm a good guy. I was called to come help all of you get back home," I said. The children were unfazed and unconvinced. They just stared at me and huddled closer together, the oldest scanning me up and down with distrust. "I'm here to stop the bad thing that scared all of you. I'm going to..." I paused, trying to think of something convincing and reassuring. "I'm going to take it to Monster Jail, where it can't hurt you," I finally said. "Are you a cop?" asked the smallest boy, pulling his thumb out of his mouth for just that instance. "Yes," I smiled, "something like that." I offered a hand for them to take. "But first I'll make sure all of you are somewhere safe." I could take them upstairs and set up a magical ward to keep them safe. It would take time, but I needed to secure the survivors before I challenged Jasar. "We're not going anywhere," said Pigtail Polka Dot Girl, interrupting my train of thought. "We don't know you. We're going to wait until our parents come for us," she finished in a stern voice. I was impressed by her bravery. The other kids seemed to be in shock, but she had pushed through the fear to protect them and stand up for them. She held herself like she was just standing up to a teacher at school, and not in a life or death situation. I'd have to handle her differently. "Please understand me. My name is Locke, like a door lock," I said with another attempt at a common smile, mimicking the correct emotions had always been hard for me, but I had to try. "I know your parents, or at least I know the leader of the USA. They hired me to come and rescue you if Bigfoot showed up. It was a lie, but I would say anything to get them to listen. We will stay here, Pigtails demanded, her eyes intense. What is your name, sweetie? I asked gently. The girl looked disarmed. She quickly looked down at one of the younger girls and said, I'm Kayla. The younger girl's face brightened up and she announced, My name is Kayla, too. She smiled up at Pigtail Polka Dot Kayla with excitement. How cool was it to meet an older kid with the same name? Well, Kayla's? I paused as I heard the approaching footsteps of something outside. Stay in here while I make sure everything is okay, I rushed saying. I quickly closed the pantry door and placed a runestone in front of it. The stone would magically mask the scent of the children. I spun around quickly to stalk to the middle of the living room, where I prepared for whatever was running towards the front door. I used my thumb on my right hand to rub the enchanted ring on my index finger. This woke up its potent magic to be on standby for me. All I had to do was grunt the right syllable to activate it. My left hand pulled out a long knife coated in a paralyzing toxin. All I had to do was nick Chisar to freeze him up for hours. I could take him in alive if he let me. As the footsteps drew near, I realized they were too quiet to be Chisar, and I caught the scent of a human. I quickly sheathed my knife behind me as the man crossed the doorway of the cabin. It was another bearded man in camo. His bald head and face were bleeding from multiple tiny cuts, and his eyes were bulged wildly. He leveled his shotgun at me and racked the slide, ejecting a perfectly good shell. He must have been running through the woods, and he was so scared he was double-pumping his weapon.
Who the hell are you?
The man yelled, more in fear than in confrontation. I work for the park, I said calmly. I'm here to get you and the children to safety.
The children? Where's my son? Where is he?
They are safe in the pantry. I will help all of you, I assured them. Now, will you please stop pointing that gun at me? I saw the man's eyes soften as he realized I wasn't a threat. He lowered the shotgun and let out a sigh mixed with a sob.
We have to hurry, partner. The squatch is close.
The man spoke before he was interrupted, giving a sudden grunt. I saw a glimmer of movement behind him, over his shoulders. The man's arms whipped out to either side, outstretched like the God-man Jesus looked in the paintings. His shotgun was flung into the corner of the room as he stared at me in pure confusion and terror. It took me only a moment to realize what was happening. It was Chisar, and he had an invisibility spell equipped. Soon as I realized this, the magic of the spell was broken, and I saw the monster with my own eyes. The gigantic Chisar stood behind the squirming man, towering over him. Chisar had a hold of both of the smaller man's arms in his own giant mitts. The man's arms were being pulled to the breaking point outwards. Chisar easily began to lift the crying man into the air. The muscles in the monster's hairy arms flexed like corded steel. The poor man looked up to see the grinning face of Chisar the Cruel looking back down at him.
Does the little monkey see me now?
Chisar asked in English. He waited to see the look of terror on the man's face before yanking both of the man's arms off in a fantastic explosion of blood and violence. The sickening snap of bone followed by the ripping sound of flesh and tendons turned my stomach. Worse was the horrid guttural yelp the dying man let out before he thudded face first to the decorative carpet, blood raining around him. Chisar stood to his full height of 8.5 feet tall, a crooked smile across his wide face. His right eye glazed over and scarred from our last fight, while the other was a sickly yellow. His brown fur was coarse and matted with dirt, with multiple pouches and belts decorating his body. A giant lumpy sack was hanging under his arm for easy reach. I could see the red liquid leaking from it and the bulging shapes of the organs stuffed inside. It was filled with the hearts Chisar had ripped out of these people. I put on a terrified face and held my hands out defensively. I looked a lot different from the last time we had fought, and I wanted him to think of me as scared human prey. All I had to do was get him once with my poison dagger. Chisar was still holding the dead man's dismembered arms like some sort of bloodied-ended clubs. He tossed them both to the ground with a wet thump. He looked right at me and gave a croaking laugh.
"You can drop the act, Locke,"
the grungy monster told me.
"I've had your scent this whole time. I knew you would come."
The monster tapped his nose and then his good eye.
"Let me see the real you, Clankin. Not this humy suit you're wearing."
"I'm not your clan kin, Chisar. You were exiled," I spat. But I would give Chisar what he wanted.
I stood straight and grabbed a hold of the illusion crystal I had activated. A simple word from me deactivated its magic, and the false image of me disappeared to reveal my true self. Instead of a well-built black man in my mid-30s with a black trench coat and combat boots, I grew in size, and my shoulders widened. Where Chisar's fur was ratty and light brown, mine was sleek and jet black. My clothes disappeared to show my bandolier and multiple pouches strapped upon me, much like Chisar. A silver circular disc hung from a chain on my neck. It was my clan's marking. It was a symbol of my station.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Chisar the Cruel. The Council of Clans has demanded an audience. I am thereby charged to perform the duty of my clan, Clan Bayot. I am compelled to take you back to be held responsible for your atrocities and for your insult to the tranquility and honor of the realm.
I recited with practice, like I had 100 times before with other criminals. Chisar just stared back flatly.
"I remember the speech from last time,"
Chisar said as he pointed at his foggy eye.
"You gave me this. Now, I want my payback."
I cracked my neck and rotated my shoulders, glad to be in my true form again. Glad to be a Sasquatch. I stood 7 feet tall, short for our kind, and Chisar stood over 8.5, tall for our kind. But I was not worried. I had bested him in combat before. Only his magic tricks helped him escape capture.
"Oh, Chris, you are always the fool,"
I taunted.
"The council also sanctioned your killing if you resisted."
I looked around at the mangled human bodies around me.
"Truth is, I had made my mind up to kill you a while ago. At least now I won't have to lie on my report about you fighting back. I forgot you were such a humy lover,"
Chisar growled back.
"You are at a severe disadvantage this time."
I heard the pantry door open behind me, and I half turned to see Polka Dot Kayla approaching.
"Get back, Kayla,"
I said, not taking my one eye off Chisar.
"Loving humies is your weakness,"
Chisar said before busting out into awful laughter. I turned to look fully at him, not understanding his sudden mirth. That's when I heard the faint swish of my poison knife being pulled out of its sheath. An instant later, I felt the knife poking against my neck. An evil laughter echoed Chisar's own laughter from over my shoulder. I suddenly got the scent of another Sasquatch, a female Sasquatch. That's when I fully realized my mistake. The little girl was a Sasquatch in disguise, sent to control the children, like the Pied Piper from your human fairy tales. Chisar was never alone. He had a mate. It's hard for me to admit, but I had made a grave mistake. I had neglected to consider Chisar's on-again, off-again mating partner. I had allowed her to trick me as she posed as a human girl. I could have easily broken her illusion spell with only a second suspicious look. My relief at finding a group of living children was so great I never checked for deception spells like I had been trained. Only the protection of my ancestors that terrifying night keeps me breathing today. Layleaf of Clan Tongara. She was in a prison camp the last time I had run into Chisar, so I got used to him being alone. But the two had always been tight. They had a toxic relationship that turned deadly to anyone around them. Seems they only stopped fighting with each other when there were others to hurt. It was like they craved the act of inflicting pain. They amplified each other's vile nature. They pushed each other to kill. Now I was stuck between the two of them. Layleaf was holding a poison knife to my throat, and the massively muscled Chisar blocked the door in front of me. I needed to activate the spell on the ring of my middle finger. If I could rub the front of it with my thumb, the potent magic would activate, and time would freeze for everything but me. The spell was a specialty of my clan. The time freeze spell was only available to peacekeepers. It was powerful and extremely dangerous if not used correctly. Moving too fast without reciting the healing mantra in your head would cause all your muscles to tear. My heart would be stopped during the spell. If I inhaled too deeply, my lungs would rupture. Gravity didn't affect me during the spell. The whole thing felt like swimming through a thick syrup. And the most important thing was to count in your head. Count to 3, count to 7, or maybe 10, before reciting the mantra to dismiss the spell. Things got more painful the longer you counted, more confusing. If you lost count or lost focus, your mind could be caught in a tailspin of a time-displaced psychosis. Your mind would feel trapped for days or weeks within the spell. The effects of TDP have been described as a week-long intense migraine while being suffocated, while hallucinating your worst fears. When you finally came out the other end of the spell, you would be exhausted, completely confused, and a bit insane. But the spell would give me the edge I needed to sidestep the blade to my throat and dart to slip around Chisar and get out of the cabin. As if Layleaf was reading my thoughts, she used my knife to nick my ear. The paralyzing agent coating the knife worked fast, and my whole body tightened up. I let out a groan as my chest contracted, and I stiffened up like a board. My entire body buzzed like an electric current ran through me. I would have toppled over like a toy soldier caught by a gust of wind if not for Layleaf steadying me on my feet. She let out a cackling laugh as she balanced me to stand on my own.
My, my, Chris. I've always wanted a copper back to play with. One to take our time cutting up, bit by bit.
She spoke in her raspy, shrill voice. She walked around into my field of view. She laughed again at my face, contorted in a toothy grimace from the poison. She was smaller than Chisar, with about my height, but she was lankier and had longer fur. She was also obviously a female by her prominent curves and hips. Her fur was brown and braided in certain spots. Many bone necklaces were looped around her neck. One large ivory bone pierced her nose. But her face was narrow, cheeks sunken, and eyes too close together to be considered attractive by my kind. Maybe she had been attractive when she was younger, before she partook of every vice from both worlds. She walked over to Chisar and bent down so she could rub her face against his. She looped her long arms around his neck and turned to look at me languidly. Chisar sniffed at her and said,
"Good to see you in your true form, baby. I can't stand the sight of humies."
Layliff reached down and grabbed the inside of Chisar's leg and watched him jump in surprise.
"Maybe I can use the spell to look like a Yumi later, for you to punish me."
She cooed at Chisar with a seductive smile. I felt like I was going to puke, but as long as they were talking, the longer I had to come up with a plan. My mind raced and I felt like a rat in a cage, but this cage was sinking into quicksand. Finally, I thought of something, and it was a truly bad idea. Really a stupid idea, but it was my only idea that might work. I slowed my breathing and focused on my finger that had the time freeze spell. The two killer lovers prattled on about something as I tried to move all my chi to my fingers. If I could activate my ring, time would freeze around me, but my body would still be functioning within the time bubble. My consciousness would still be active, and so would my internal organs if I commanded them to work. I could intentionally lose myself in the spell and endure hours or even days of torture, long enough to work the toxin out of my system. I would have to pump my heart and flush the toxins out of my body, so I would have to breathe and let hours pass while time was at a standstill. I said earlier this could rupture my lungs, but it could maintain them if I used my chi and mantra to accomplish it. This was stupid and extremely dangerous, but I had no other option. If I messed up, my heart would explode. This was true in extreme cases, but mostly victims of TDP came out the other end having a stroke or heart attack. But there was a way to survive without my heart killing me on the other end of the spell. There was a healing mantra for the heart specifically I could recite while stuck in my mind. The trick was not losing focus on the mantra while my mind went through hell. That would be three mantras, one for my heart, one for my lungs, and one to keep my mind from shattering completely. They would be recited in my mind constantly. If I lost the rhythm, I would surely die today.
"Wait, Chris,"
Layliff inquired, cocking her head as she looked at me.
"Why isn't the fur on his back copper like all the other law-worshipping bastards of the Bayot clan? It was copper the last time we fought him, wasn't it?"
she asked, looking up lovingly to Chisar. Chisar smirked and let out a derisive laugh.
"That's because old Locke isn't a blood member of the clan. He is a hang-around that kissed their self-righteous asses so much, they finally let him into the clan."
"That's why he is so little and has that shitty dark fur."
Layliff cackled, and Chisar joined in while groping her and pulling her close to his body. Chisar began marching towards me, bending over slightly to look me in the eye. He lowered his shoulder like he was coming in for a tackle, but I knew what he was doing. He was showing me the copper-colored fur on his back. He was mocking me.
"It must tear you up inside, huh, Locke?"
Chisar spoke, now only inches away from my face, his rancid breath filling my nostrils.
"The fact I'm a true-blooded Bayot clan member, and I've turned my back on my pious kin. Then there's you, a clanless mutt that had to grovel to be accepted as a peacekeeper in my clan.
Chisar was right about most of it, except he didn't willingly leave the clan. Chisar was disavowed and excommunicated by the clan when he was caught violating his peacekeeper duties. He was discovered helping criminal elements in the illegal trafficking of humans. His partner, a warden of great integrity, found out, and Chisar killed him. He earned the cruel part of his moniker when he killed his partner's family as well. He was trying to make it look like a criminal cartel had placed a hit on his partner's entire family. This was a common tactic used by a vicious criminal gang known as the Shrouded Star. The only problem was a child survived. It was his partner's young daughter. Chisar had left her beaten and in a coma. 2 years I protected the comatose cub from Chisar's secret attempts to kill the helpless witness. He hired assassins to kill the defenseless girl, but I protected her. We were always on the run, trying to stay ahead of the assassins. But Chisar used his contacts in the clan to always find her. I had my suspicions that Chisar was dirty, but I was an outsider, and Chisar was an honored blood member. So I kept the sleeping child alive until she woke 2 years later. She quickly ID'd Chisar as her family's killer. That was 30 years ago, and now me and Chisar faced one another once again. I had to risk everything to stop his murderous rampage through the realms. The surviving children would either be killed or forced into a worse fate in the breeding mills if I failed. Chisar's ugly face was smiling at me when I activated the time spell with my finger. The hatred I felt as I looked upon his scarred countenance could be the mental anchor I needed to get through this spell with my mind intact. I know I've introduced a lot of new concepts and information to you in only a short time, but please bear with me. I will try my hardest to interpret what happened to me during the time freeze. Later I can break down the theoretical usage of magic and how it works, but for right now, try to follow along as I give a crash course. I focus my chi on keeping my heart from rupturing. I pulled air in and out of my lungs by manually asserting myself, but the air around me was also frozen in time, so nothing fresh came in after two breaths. Thought and belief have a great effect on magic. Maybe you would call it faith. I had to believe I was breathing air into my lungs by reciting the healing mantra in my mind, even though it felt like I was suffocating. Like Schrodinger's cat, I was dying and being kept alive at the same time. My existence kept in balance by magic and my sheer force of will. It's hard to relate how long it felt when I was frozen, but it was terrible and seemed like an eternity. But as my mind began to hallucinate and my body screamed in panic, I focused on Chisar's ugly face. My hate would be my anchor. My mind began to dream, showing me the child Sasquatch waking up from her coma. I saw the tears in her eyes as she remembered the murder of her family. I had been around the cub's age when my family had been murdered. I was left an orphan without a clan just like her. I had pledged myself to the Bayok clan to be a peacekeeper, and they put me through hell to earn my place. But finally I became a warden, and I could help broken children. My whole life played back to me, but distorted and cruel, even though it had been cruel enough already. Finally, I came back to the point in my life where I opened the pantry in the cabin to find the human children hiding. But this time, all the children were dead. Their bodies ripped to pieces. Their organs piled on top of their desecrated bodies. Kayla, Lalif, stood atop the gore pile in human form. She was holding the head of the younger girl in her hands. The evil Kayla laughed a horrid laugh in Layla's voice. The head of the younger girl, also named Kayla, opened her dead eyes to look at me. She also spoke in a raspy voice.
"Save us, Locke, like a door lock,"
as dark blood began spurting out of her mouth. The human child's bloody head slowly transformed into Chisar's grinning face. I once again realized where I was, standing in the cabin surrounded by bodies. I stared at my hated enemy and realized my body no longer had the tingling sensation of the paralyzing poison in my veins. The healing mantra repeated in my mind like a record on repeat. I felt confusion spin back up, like a mental tornado that would pull me back into hallucinations and nightmares. I had to end the spell. I had to attack Chisar. I focused my mind to a sharp point and mentally commanded the mantra to end the time freeze. At the same time, I thrust my right hand forward with all my might. When the spell ended, my fist had moved faster than the speed of light to smash through Chisar's chest. It was as if my arm just phased through his massive chest to appear out the other side. An instant later, his blood and viscera exploded outwards, spattering Layliff behind them. Coming back to reality from being suspended in time for what seemed like a millennium had immediate and dire consequences on my body. I was no longer paralyzed, but my body might break down anyways from the shock. The clap of a sonic boom shattered all the windows in the cabin and threw both me and Chisar apart from each other. Chisar barreled into Layliff and they both tumbled out the doorway into the yard. As I was launched back to smash into a dresser, exploding into kindling, my head pounded and my heart raced as I let out an animalistic scream of pure pain and frustration. My right arm hung limply by my side, broken in multiple places. Training had taught me to be completely still when ending the time spell, but in my confusion I had lashed out, punching, with momentum at a supersonic speed. This foolish move had shattered my arm. I fussed and screamed, my mind still thinking I was trapped in time. I fumbled my shaky left hand to pull a small glass vial from my belt. I crushed it against my forehead and let the calming ointment run down my face. I breathed in its scent, helping me focus my scattered mind. Now that my head was back on straight, it didn't mean my body was going to hold up. I was partially embedded into the thick wall behind me. I was crumpled up in the sitting position, my back throbbing, my arms screaming with agony. I could hear Layla freaking out, outside in the yard. She was screaming and calling out to Chisar repeatedly. He must have looked like a gory mess. I couldn't help but smile in spite of my pain.
"The hearts?"
I heard her ask. I heard more growling and mumbling from Chisar before she replied.
"Yes, love, anything. Just stay with me while I prepare the spell. Stay with me."
This was not good. Layliff was going to use forbidden blood magic to heal Chisar. The human heart could be used for a powerful healing spell. I focused on listening for sounds coming from the killers outside. I could hear Layliff pulling Chisar deeper into the forest, probably looking for a safe place to perform her healing spell ritual. I was already at a severe disadvantage before, but if Layliff buffed Chisar with blood magic, me and the surviving children had no chance in escaping tonight. I had to think fast. I had to do something to tip the odds in my favor. I thought of my inventory spells and magical items I had on my person. Most were standard issue to members of the Bayot clan. The most potent one was the time freeze ring I had already spent. The only thing left was my amulet of ancestors. The amulet of ancestors was what it sounded like, an amulet. I received it once being accepted into the clan, once I became a warden. It was only to be used in severe instances where a clan member was on the brink of death or a defeat that could cause severe dishonor to the clan. When the amulet was activated, it sent a beacon of invitation to all Bayok clan ancestors who had already passed on to the afterlife. Any ancestor could choose to come to your aid, or they could refuse to help. But once an ancestor lended you their strength, wisdom, and skill, it took a heavy toll on your body. You could be stricken with a chronic sickness, a loss of a limb, or even blindness. Requesting help from the afterlife always came with a heavy price. It was a last-ditch effort to keep yourself alive, but it still wouldn't be enough. I would still be outmatched. Chisar would be powered by blood magic, and Lalith was an expert with hexes and curses. I needed something else to give me an edge. That's when I saw it. A human heart had fallen out of Chisar's bag when I hit him. It lay in a bloody pool on the cabin floor. The red organ tempted me like the fruit tempted your biblical Eve. It was against clan doctrine, and I would be punished severely. But it would work. I could defeat Chisar and save the human children. I had to eat the heart. I worked fast as I could in crippling pain to set up the blood magic spell. I had been forced to learn forbidden magic as part of my job to recognize and fight it. I had never once performed an illegal ritual myself, though. I had to use chalk to draw a circle and symbols of power around the heart. I began my low chant of attuning magic into the dead heart. I was using siphoning magic from my chi to activate the magic within the heart. After a couple of minutes, I felt the heart awaken, and it began to pump on its own. I had done a crappy job, and the spell would be weak, but I had no time left. I hoped even a low-powered heart could help me survive this night. I lifted the wet pulsing heart to my mouth. If I eat this, it would put an end to my unblemished career. I had worked harder than any other warden to gain the respect of the Bayot clan. I would be eating human flesh of a murdered victim to perform an illegal spell.
Lark! Lark of the Bayot clan! I'm coming for you!
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it, but Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Came the loud animalistic scream from Chisar. His declaration was followed by Lalith's cackling laughter. She had done it. She had healed him. I was about to die if I didn't eat the heart. I took a big bite of the gooey organ. I was surprised at how delicious it was. I shoved the rest of it into my mouth, eating greedily. I felt the magic pulsing within me immediately. A great heat spread from my stomach outward. My shattered arm bones melted back together. The pains all in my body winked out of existence. I stood up and felt alive. I felt perfect. I raced outside to face Chisar under the night sky. I watched the tree line with heightened concentration, ready for him to emerge. I saw movement. Too small, too fast. I stepped aside, an ATV being launched at me. It smashed into a parked car behind me. How had Chisar done that? Had he thrown it? My question was answered as Chisar came bounding out of the tree line, his frame even more massive than before. He stopped and looked at me with crazed eyes, drool frothing from his mouth. His muscles rippled and pulsed like the heart I had eaten.
You're back on your feet? Good. It pleases me to know I made you compromise your integrity. Before I kill you,
Chisar said in a deep voice, spittle flying everywhere.
Chisar, what have you done?
I asked in terror. I had never seen anything like him before.
My lay leaf is quite the witch. In the time it took for you to enchant one heart, she enchanted five of mine.
Five? I repeated in a weak voice. His muscles continued to grow, and he now stood around 13 feet high.
Don't worry about me, Locke, Chisar mocked. I feel perfect.
As I stood 20 feet away from the grinning Hulk and Chisar, I knew the one heart I had eaten wouldn't be enough to defeat him. The silence between us was oppressing. A cloud blocking the moon moved enough for its light to illuminate us. All I could hear was Chisar's heavy breathing and the pounding of my own heart.
Come on, Law Dog, Chisar screamed. Come arrest me!
I remained as still as a statue, but this aggravated the rabid Chisar.
After I kill you, I'll have my mate scoop out your brain. My Laelief knows enough spells to look into your memories. I will find the girl. You know, the little coma girl. I'll finish what I started and kill her for sure this time.
I knew this wasn't a bluff. Chisar was vindictive enough, and such magic spells were possible. I had seen the Bayok clan use it on murder victims to find their killers.
Fine. If you don't want to make the first move,
Chisar interrupted himself by launching towards me like a freight train. Performing an attack in the middle of a sentence was one of his dirty tricks, meant to catch me off guard. But I'd seen this trick before. I sidestepped him easily this time, his fist almost rocking my skull loose. As his momentum carried him by, I could feel a gust of air generated by his swing sweep across my fur. He pivoted quickly and sprung back at me. I avoided his attack by batting aside his fist with both forearms while leaning away from him. Even though it was a glancing blow, both my arms jolted in pain. He was much faster and much stronger than before. I had bested him once in his normal state. He always relied on his size and brute force to bash his way to victory. Many of my kind thought this way. It was a source of pride to match strength to strength. But I had studied many of Earth's martial arts, something seen as dishonorable in my realm, and combined it with Bayot fighting style. As advanced as Sasquatch society was in every way compared to humans, humans were always far more advanced in killing. Most of my society lived in relative peace. War was rare and unnatural. Not like on Earth, where societies are built upon killing each other and fighting styles are honed for centuries. Chisar launched a swinging backhand at me. I ducked and came up with a hard jab right to his throat. It felt like punching a wall made out of meat, and Chisar showed no effect. Chisar continued swinging at me, over and over, never losing steam. I was barely dodging his lethal strikes by inches. If any connected, I would be dead. Every time I saw an opening, I shot back with my own pinpoint attacks. My strikes were to all the pressure points and weak spots on a Sasquatch's body, but none of them even slowed him or stunned him. His unnatural muscle mass was like a thick, spongy layer of body armor. The magic flowing through him could keep him at peak performance for days. I took a chance and slowed my dodging to get better footing to launch my own attack. I needed to put more power to take him down. Chisar squared up with me and came in low with a tackle. I jumped right back at him instead of dodging. I took a flying leap and slammed both my fists down on top of his head with all my strength. Chisar's face was smacked down into the dirt. My fist throbbed numbly as I stepped back from him. My gamble had worked and redirected his forward momentum into the ground. If he were to grapple me up, I would be dead. I reached into my bandolier. I could put a freezing spell on him while he was down. Faster than anything I'd ever seen before, Chisar launched upwards by pushing up with his arms to spin and face me. A massive kick hit me right in the chest and sent me crashing through bushes and branches. I felt my ribs crack and would have died if not for the blood magic reinforcing my body. Before I could even get up, Chisar was almost on top of me, steamrolling after me. I rolled backwards to nimbly get to my feet as his fist came down like a hammer where I once lay. I decided to completely turn my back on my vicious enemy and try to sprint further into the forest, getting some much-needed space between us. I could hear him following, swatting trees out of his way like they were nothing. Branches and debris crashed all around him as he desperately tried to catch me. But the trees were growing closer and thicker together as we ran. I was deftly weaving between them and getting some distance away from the brute. After a while, the tumultuous noise, Chisar's rampage, stopped. I scrambled up the nearest tree and turned to survey my surroundings. No sight or sound of them. I took the opportunity to enact another spell to heighten my senses and another potion to make me lighter on my feet. I would lose half of my weight but not compromise any of my strength. It was one of the few potions not destroyed when Chisar kicked me right in the chest, crushing my bandolier. My sharpened hearing picked out the voice of Chisar chanting, and it was getting louder. I couldn't make out what spell he was trying to perform. I got my answer when the large tree limb I was standing on became fluid and nimble like a snake. The tip of the branch closest to me curled back towards me and looped around my arm as I instinctively raised it to protect myself. The branch jerked my hand away, leaving my neck open for another snake and tree limb to loop around. I chopped the limb with my free hand to release my captured hand. The branch around my neck pulled me up off the footing I had as it tried to strangle me by hanging. I used all my strength to pull free of the branch's twisting grasp. I fell from the tree, hitting every branch on the way down. My fall was slowed due to all the branches reaching and pulling on me. I landed on a larger branch 10 feet from the ground and perched atop it to get my bearing. I looked up and slapped away any branches coming for me. Something hard whacked me on the back of my head, and I turned to see a neighboring tree reaching towards me, whipping its branches out to strike me. I was dazed and losing my footing as my tree swayed back and forth, trying to throw me off. So I jumped to another thickly branched tree that wasn't attacking me. As soon as I touched the new tree, it reacted the same way as the last and sent all of its branches to lash out. I jumped again and realized the spell was broken as soon as I got a couple yards away. I landed on the ground with a loud thud. I thought I would be safe from activating the killer trees as long as I didn't touch them, but even the twigs and bushes grabbed at me. I ran, tearing through them like thick spider webs. I was trying my hardest not to navigate through the thickly packed trees, but my large frame was harassed by them, with branches whipping and jabbing into my thick fur. For some reason, the trees and bushes stopped trying to tangle me up, and I paused to look behind me. It seemed like the enchanted spell on the trees had ended. I kept a sharp eye out for Chisar. The trees were packed so close together, it would have been impossible for him to steamroll towards me without hearing him a mile away. I was trying to catch my breath while picking twigs out of my fur. I scanned the woods around me by slowly turning in a circle. I grew angry with myself. What was I doing? Was I just running away? Just going to escape only to lick my wounds and sulk? No. I was here to execute justice and stop the two killers. I wondered why the onslaught had stopped. What were Chisar and Lalif's next move? The silence was killing me, but maybe this gave me time to activate my amulet. I lifted the amulet from around my neck to hold it at eye level. I would be lying if I said I wasn't nervous. I was an outsider to the clan, and I had caused myself a great dishonor by eating the heart. I was afraid of the further shame of being turned down by my ancestors. If word of my plea for help was ignored, I would lose all credibility I worked decades to build.
Copperback! Are you getting tired?
Came Lalif's voice from behind me. I spun around to stare at the tree closest to me. It took me a second for my eyes to make out a face protruding from the tree. It was Lalif's face, the tree bark forming to look like her.
We knew you would be coming. We knew you would run toward the screams of dying humans without a second thought.
The face in the tree said to me. I looked around to see her face on all the trees around me, all staring back at me. Magic like this must have taken a while to set up.
I won't let you hurt my Chris again,
Tree Lalif screamed.
He may be mad I didn't let him kill you, but you are too tricky of a copperback, too unpredictable. Something you probably inherited from your dead clan's blood.
The wooden face smiled.
My magic has been spread all throughout these woods. You were hexed the moment you left the cabin. So now you die, Locke!
The tree I was staring at began to smoke. Flickers of orange and red embers could be seen spreading from the smiling face outwards. Bits of sizzling bark fell off to reveal the glowing hot embers underneath. Lalif's burning face laughed at me as I took a few cautionary steps back. A rune on my belt vibrated sharply. It meant danger. I sidestepped behind a nearby tree for cover. A split second later, the burning tree exploded violently. Burning wood embedded itself into my shoulder that wasn't protected by cover. I heard a thunderous rumble as the tree fell toward me to crash into the tree I was hiding behind. I jumped away from both trees as it cracked and both fell towards me. I quickly scrambled on all fours out of the impact zone of the fallen trees. As I was still on all fours, I used the stability of another tree to stand myself up. This was a bad idea because it started glowing orange, with smoke rising from the cracks between the bark. I began my sprint as tree after tree in my proximity began to glow and explode. I pushed my body to run faster as the heat waves from the explosion scorched over me. I felt the burning hot debris pelting my back, and I knew my fur was on fire because I could smell it. I pushed and pushed through the exploding trees, but I was losing steam, and the trees were getting closer and closer as they fell. Even in my rush, I noticed the trees always fell in my direction. Finally, I saw what my salvation might be. Two large boulders, one leaning on the other, jutting 5 feet out of the ground. I leaped out of the tree line to perch upon the rocks with a balance unnatural to my size. The explosion stopped, and I quickly patted out the small fires all over my body. I was grateful for my luck when the rock underfoot didn't start glowing. I felt I was safe for the time being. I deduced the explosion spell was triggered by being in close proximity to the trees. I was in a small clearing with the woods in a 3-yard radius around me, so at least I knew the reach of the spell now. I stared at the would-be bombs thickly packed around me. I was still at risk of them falling on me if they exploded. I knew I had to get out of these woods. I had seen a decent-sized clearing about 2 miles east of here, but I didn't know if I could sprint the whole way and not get caught up in an explosion.
You think you're safe? You think I can't see you?
Bellowed Layla's voice from the wood line surrounding me. That's when my worst fear happened. All the trees began to glow around me. I felt like I had activated another time freeze spell because time slowed down as my mind raced to think of something. I quickly jumped down beside the rocks and crouched facing them, making myself small. I hugged myself tight and prayed for safety as the trees exploded with a monumental bang. The earth shook under me, and the sound of fallen timber rained down. I felt a stabbing jolt of pain as a branch slashed down my back. I screamed but balled myself tighter. When I opened my eyes, I was locked away in darkness. I was in a tomb of dead wood. Of course, they all fell down towards me, but the boulders propped them up enough to save me. So now I sat trapped and bleeding under a makeshift teepee of fallen trees. Barely any moonlight was visible through the limbs and branches, and I had just barely enough room to lift my head. The position I was stuck in was hell on my broken ribs. I tried to uncurl myself, only to feel the tree branch jab into my new wound. I grasped my amulet in both hands. My back throbbed with pain and the dust clogged my eyes and nose. I had to use the amulet. Jasar and Lalif would be coming to finish me off. I rubbed the amulet and placed it to my forehead.
I beseech the help of my ancestors during these mortal trials. I beseech the help of my ancestors during these mortal trials.
I repeated over and over. At first, I thought no one would answer. I wasn't a clan blood member. Would the oldest, more traditional ancestors even recognize me as one of them? But the amulet began to vibrate, and I heard a low hum in my ears like a million tuning forks all at once. Suddenly, my confined space disappeared, and I was in a spacious area of foggy gray. The floor under me felt like water, but was solid enough to hold my weight. I looked around, trying to see anything but thick fog. I was in the gray, a purgatory plane between the living and the dead, but it seemed no one was here to answer my cry for help.
Who is this black-furred imposter that cries out to us?
Came a deep voice in the old tongue. A blinding light assailed me from a distance. It was so bright I couldn't look directly at it. I could only see shadow outlines of figures standing together through squinted eyes. I racked my brain for the words to respond. We all had to learn the old tongue during training, but that was decades ago.
I am Locke of the Bayot clan, first of my name. My old clan is all but gone. I have written the clan's doctrine on my heart and have been granted membership. I seek help in defeating an ex-clan member who has committed sacrilege to our tenets. Yes, our blood children have granted you membership through your action and character,
came another voice.
But maybe it was in folly. You have within you the blood of a slain human. You have partaken of the forbidden magics to serve your selfish desires, with no thought of the dishonor you bring on all of us. No, I did it for the lastly, the Stray asks us to help him kill a blood member.
Another voice interrupted.
Even if he is a fallen blood member, he still has more favor than you and your tainted magic.
At this, I said nothing. I didn't even want to argue my case. I was pissed. The old spirits were stuck in their ways and ancient prejudices. I should have let the dead stay dead. I calmly stood and tried to look into the blinding light.
Then send me back. I know of my own integrity. If I die and you don't accept me, I will go into the void knowing my honor is clean.
I proclaimed as I turned my back on the light, showing them I was done with their self-righteous judgment.
Wait! Locke, was it?
Came a voice in English. I thought it was strange because only in the last 500 years had English been taught to us. I turned to face the light.
Yes, of the Bayok clan,
I said sharply. I could see the outline of another shadow closer than the rest.
You protected the girl? You protected Isika?
The voice asked.
Yes,
I said confused, thinking of the girl I protected during her coma.
She is alive and thriving. She has a life mate and a girl cub of her own now.
The shadow began to approach me. As it got closer, the dimmer the light shined behind it. As it got 3 yards from me, the light had vanished, and I could make out the tall, gangly figure. It was a male Sasquatch with long brown fur. I was shaken by its bloody throat dripping endlessly down its fur. He looked at me with gray-blue eyes rare to my kind. Isika had blue-gray eyes. This was her father. Now I remembered him. I had only seen him dead in his home, with his throat slashed and his hands chopped off.
You are Peacekeeper Viskin,
I stated. The solemn Sasquatch nodded his head slightly in affirmation.
It's Jassar,
I told him.
He and his mate have killed dozens of humans, and are going to keep the young for the breeding mills. Oh, Chris,
the dead Sasquatch said with sadness.
He is a creature of habit. He can't stop himself from hurting everyone around him.
I stared at the dead peacekeeper, my kin and colleague. I had heard he was honorable, but was he tough enough to help me win the fight? I hate to seem like a snob, but since nobody else would help me, Jassar had killed him once already. His demeanor was downcast. Blood from his throat and his arms ending in bloody stumps made him look pathetic. But when he looked up at me, his eyes were filled with anger.
He poisoned me!
Viskin yelled. I realized I had screwed up. He could read my thoughts somehow.
He knew he couldn't beat me in combat. He poisoned me and killed my family with his bare hands.
The enraged Viskin yelled, spittle flying from his mouth.
He could have poisoned them too, but he likes the violent thrill of it. He enjoyed beating my wife and son to death. He enjoyed putting my daughter into a coma. When he cut off my hands, it held a double meaning,
Viskin said as he held up his bloody stumps for me to see.
It wasn't just to make it look like an assassination by the Shrouded Hand, but a personal insult towards me. He cut off my hands because of the techniques I had mastered. techniques that always scared him and made him doubt if he could take me one-on-one.
Well, what was it? I asked cautiously.
Perform the mantra to accept my help, and I'll show you, Clan Ken.
Biskin demanded. He stepped up to me only inches away. His sadness turned into a blazing anger.
Do you want to kill this bastard or not?
I recited the ending mantra to leave the gray, the realm between the living and the dead. Now I was coming back to your earth, with backup from a Sasquatch previously murdered by Chisar. I opened my eyes to be greeted by pitch darkness and pain shooting through my ribs and back. I was still trapped under the fallen trees. I didn't know what I expected after using the amulet, but I didn't feel different at all. Maybe I expected to feel stronger or wiser, but I was still in pain and had no idea what to do. A muscular hand shot down from above, busting through the wooden prison to grab me by the nape of the neck. I was yanked up through the hole violently. The branches scraped and tore at me as I was lifted high into the moonlit sky, free from my wooden prison. Chisar held me up with one hand high in the air. We were upon a canopy of fallen trees. Somehow all the branches had been flattened like corn stalks in a crop circle. It wasn't just the trees closest to me that had fallen, but trees in a 50-yard radius. All of them fallen and pointing inward towards me at the center, the tree limbs magically flattened for Chisar to find me.
There he is! You better be glad he isn't dead from your tricks.
Chisar spit at Lalith, who was sulking behind them.
I didn't want him to hurt you anymore, love.
Lalith argued meekly behind them, looking like a scolded child. She tried to come and hang from Chisar's arm, but he grabbed her roughly by the fur on top of her head and tossed her away. She stumbled and tripped on the unsteady footing. Her leg broke through the canopy of flattened branches and she fell partially through to catch painfully by her waist. She cried out in pain and sorrow from her mate's rebuke.
You interfere again, bitch. I will break your jaw,
Chisar warned. The insanity in his eyes was greater than I'd ever seen. I fully believed Chisar would viciously beat Lalith if she did anything else. While dangling in the air like a child, I threw my hardest punch to Chisar's face. It had the same effect as punching a furry slab of iron.
I've never eaten a fellow Sasquatch's heart before.
Chisar sneered as he jabbed his finger into my chest, digging into my skin.
But I think I've developed a taste for the thing.
I screamed and grabbed at his hand with both of mine, trying to pull his hand away from digging deeper into my skin. I began to panic and wonder why Viskin wasn't helping. Nothing was helping. A bright flash of an image appeared in my mind. It was the palm of a Sasquatch's hand where the fur didn't grow. The hand had an ornate tattoo of a circular symbol colored in a vibrant teal.
Place your blood in the middle,
a voice in my head urged. The next mental image was of a bloody symbol being drawn on the tattooed palm with the pointer finger of the offhand.
Slap your palms together to activate the spell,
Viskin's voice instructed.
I'll perform the chant. You rip him apart.
I did as commanded, dabbing my finger near the wound where Chisar was digging his fingers into me. I held up my right palm, but didn't see the teal tattoo. I felt the mental urging to proceed from Viskin, so I drew the blood symbol anyway. Chisar's wicked smile faltered for a moment as he saw what I was doing. He had a look of surprise and concern. He recognized the spell. I slapped my palms together and had no idea what to expect. Viskin's spirit chanted an unfamiliar chant in my head as the tips of my fingers began to glow yellow, red, then blue. An immense heat radiated from the last digits of my fingers on both hands. I could feel the intense heat everywhere but my glowing fingertips. I looked Chisar square in the eye and growled a hateful growl that wasn't entirely my own. I grabbed his hand, sticking into my chest with my left. My fingers burnt through his muscled forearms like a hot knife through butter. He screamed in pain. I made my right hand into a knife hand and intended to jab it into Chisar's eyes. He quickly flung me away from the grip he had on the back of my neck. I struck out, but he reacted too quick. He tossed me so fast, my outstretched strike was just barely out of reach when I threw it. I flew high to land on a fallen log with the balance of a gymnast. My weight spell must have still been activated. I gritted my teeth as I prepared to launch back at him.
"Don't make a fist!"
Biskin's spirit yelled. I realized I was about to make two of them out of muscle memory. I surely would have burnt my hands off if I did.
"How is this?"
Chisar asked. He stepped back and broke through the weaker branches to stumble slightly. Chisar must have finally figured out what was happening, because a look of terror crossed his face.
"The amulet! Viskin!"
he croaked in a harsh voice.
"He was the only one who knew how to wield the Scalding Touch."
"He still is," I answered back calmly as I held my arms out wide, superheated fingers splayed. I ran at him again. He tried to backpedal, but his large frame kept causing him to break the branches underneath and trip up. I slashed at him with my fingertips. I carved glowing orange chunks out of him. He would swing his mighty attacks, only for me to leap away and flank around him and burn him again. After about 2 minutes of me jumping around and using Scalding Touch, I had cauterized his tendons in his arms and shoulders. Chisar was slumping, stuck waist-high in the brambles. He had deep, raking burns all over his body. He breathed heavily, looking up at me in surrender. I stood on a fallen tree in front of him. I looked around to see no sign of Lalith.
"Your mate has forsaken you," I said coldly to him. "You are on your own. It's two against one now. Please,"
Chisar panted.
"I surrender. Don't kill me."
He was pathetic. The giant cocky killer had been reduced to a sad, burnt lowlife. I felt a twinge of sadness for him. Maybe I would take him to stand trial before the council.
"You didn't show me mercy."
My mouth spoke on its own.
"My wife, my son, even my daughter,"
I screamed at him in Viskin's voice. Before I knew it, I lunged forward to grab Chisar by the sides of his head, my fingers burning into him. He screamed, unable to lift his arms to defend himself, as I plunged both glowing thumbs into his eyes, bursting them on contact. He screamed and screamed as his head smoked, and I drove my fingers up into his brain. He went limp and I held him up burning. The top of his skull beginning to glow.
"It's over, Viskin. He's dead,"
I yelled out. Only then did I realize the body slumped backwards, smoke coming out of his eye holes.
"Yes, it is done, Peacekeeper Locke,"
the vengeful spirit told me.
"I thank you for giving me back my honor."
"You never lost it, Viskin," I replied to the ghost in my head.
"Do you still require my assistance?"
"No, I don't think so. Lalith has probably already fled across the gap by now."
It was an honor, Locke of Clan Bayot. Too bad we didn't get to work together in my past life, the voice said. And with that, Viskin fell silent, never to speak again. My fingers stopped glowing and I stood there looking at Chisar's dead body. I felt the pain and fatigue creep back up on me. Now that the adrenaline was out of my system, my body was punishing me. I had some minor pain-dampening spells still on my belt. I had the time to perform them and then go check on the kids. But this plan was discarded as soon as I heard the thrumming sound of two helicopters approaching. I looked up to see two black choppers buzz over the clearing, heading towards the house. I pushed myself to begin running after them. I didn't know who they were, but I wasn't taking any chances. There were humans on this side of the gap that helped the interdimensional human trafficking. My body screamed at me as I pushed myself to run faster. When I got to the clearing around the cabin, I saw both the choppers hovering while dropping down zip lines. I was almost to the busted front doors when the first black-clad soldier hit the ground. He turned in time to see me backhand him off his feet, and I darted inside. I skidded to the pantry and saw my runestone was still there. Good. It means they didn't run away and are still inside. I could hear the clamor of soldiers calling out orders to each other. Before I knew it, my fingertips began to glow blue again. I didn't know how many armed men were out there, but I would kill them all if they made me. I had come too far to lose the kids now. A flashbang rolled in and I turned my head to the side. I was thankful my sharpened senses spell had run out when a loud bang assaulted my eardrums. When I opened my eyes, eight people had entered the cabin and were pointing automatic rifles at me.
Freeze, asshole! Don't make one move!
A soldier screamed in a distorted voice. His face was covered by a gas mask, just like all the others in his squad.
If you take one step toward these kids, I will rip your face off,
I shouted back at them. It was only around 5 seconds, but it felt like an eternity as we stared at each other. It was a standoff that would only end with more blood. I was already planning the quickest way I would kill them.
Hello, Locke. Do you think we can do our jobs without killing each other? Said a gas mask-wearing soldier to my right.
At first, I didn't understand them, until I realized he was speaking in the language of the indigenous people, the ones that ruled here long ago. The soldier lowered his weapon and removed his mask to reveal a familiar face. It was Rising Eagle, a friend from this side of the gap. My fingers stopped glowing and I dropped my hands. Rising Eagle gestured for his men to do the same.
That's new, he said, pointing at my hands.
He walked forward and extended his hand for a handshake.
Can you still shake an old friend's hand with that new trick?
I smiled as the feeling of relief flooded me. Not all reality wardens were Sasquatches. The humans did their part too.
Sorry we didn't get here sooner,
Rising Eagle said as he shook my giant hand.
Some wolves were trying to open up a portal to the damned kingdoms. Rival clans pitched a fit for us to help them.
I informed Rising Eagle about killing Chisar and Layla fleeing. I told him the kids were hiding behind me. He told me the kids would be given amnestics and taken care of. One of the medics treated my injuries while I performed minor healing spells before I left to return to my world. A report had to be made. It was a terrible night with too many close calls and dead civilians. But at least the kids were safe and Chisar was dead. I knew the humans on this side could handle the rest. As I walked back into the woods to find my gateway, I wondered what ailment I would suffer from using the amulet. But even if it took all my senses, it would still have been worth it. So that's the quick wrap-up of my case. But a word of warning, humans.
This is the reason I started writing this. Stop looking for Bigfoot. You might be lucky and find me, but most likely you'll be killed or kidnapped by others not so friendly. And that was I'm a Warden Between Realities by author Cecily, 1987. A little about the author. Cecily, 1987, has a background in law enforcement, corrections, and security. This story draws from an actual experience he had on the job. At this point in his life, however, he'd rather write about crazy incidents than experience them firsthand. He names all his cats after anime characters and is a fan of Stephen King, Warhammer 40K, Silent Hill, and Max Payne. Thank you, Cecily.
And do old Drew Blood a favor, would you? Subscribe to his podcast wherever you do your listening and leave him a 5-star review and a kind word, even if you're listening on YouTube. He needs soldiers on all fronts to win this battle, and he appreciates it. To hear a premium ad-free edition of tonight's and all the other episodes, visit SimplyScaryPodcast.com today and click Patrons in the upper menu. You'll find yourself at ChillinTalesForDarkNights.com, where you can become a patron for as little as $5 per month and get access to their entire audio archive, all ad-free and available to download or stream. Thank you for your time and for supporting our sponsors. When you support our sponsors, you support this show. If you happen to use Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube, you can follow and subscribe to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights there, where you'll get all the latest updates and new releases and have the chance to interact with them each and every week. Oh, and you can find Drew Blood on Facebook and Instagram, and sometimes Twitter. The Drew Blood's Dark Tales podcast is accepting submissions, friend. If you've got a story or two you'd like to be featured on the show, send it to drewbloodhorror@gmail.com. If selected, you'll get the full treatment, 10 bananas.
Well, I'm afraid this is where we part ways, friend, at least till next week. Hey, the Crimson Hour is taking a little break for a while. It's just too muggy over there, you know. I'll be sure to let you know when I'm back at the new haunt. So may the wind be at your back, and may the road rise up to meet you. I'll see you all on Independence Day. Until then, go fuck yourself.
I caught you on the Mingolandia, boy. You're coming down. We have lost a lot on K. Charlie, put it on the plate. Yeah, me.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.